You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We've got a great show for you this afternoon. Dave Malinsky will join us straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. A man that I call the Professor Dave Malinsky. We have a triple header of NBA basketball on tap this evening. We'll run through all three games with the professor or whatever else is on Dave Malinsky's mind. Chris Meaney will join me in studio and we'll talk pucks as the NHL playoffs continue. And I tell you what, the underdog bettors are cashing large, man. It's hard to lay a number right now in the NHL. You know who else is cashing large? People that play ties, regulation ties. 11 of these games, 24 games, 11 of them have gone to overtime. 11 games have gone to overtime. It pays like plus 240, plus 250, plus 260. If you bet $100 on every NHL playoff game, so far to go to overtime, you'd be up about $1,300 right now. And if you bet against every Toronto Blue Jay game, you'd be up like $1,300 right now. that goes hand in hand, but we'll get to that in a couple of moments' time. But there's money to be made in the NHL. Over the last couple of nights, I'm not making it. I can't win, man. Like, you know, that's why I don't like betting on hockey, because I always get freaking screwed in the regular season with this four-on-four crap. And you know, whenever these overtime games are prolonged in the playoffs, you know Bettman's getting upset and thinking to himself, we should probably go four-on-four in the playoffs. I always get screwed in the regular season. I never win shootouts. My record in shootouts are like worse than the Leafs. I swear I'm like 2-22 in shootouts or something like that this year. And in overtime in the playoffs, I basically, when a game goes to overtime and I have money on it, I just know, stop watching. You're not going to win. And it's simple as that. I had the Chicago Blackhawks last night. You know, Blackhawks were in an absolutely positively has to be there overnight must win situation last night. They're up 2-0. Everything's going according to plan. It's all good. Wrong. Absolutely brutal, man. Brutal. But we'll talk pucks. Chris Meaney's going to join me in studio. Dave Malinsky talks basketball, maybe a little baseball with Dave as well. And of course, our NFL mock draft continues on the program as we're getting up there right now into the draft. What are we doing on the program today? We're up to what, 15 to 20 right now. All right, so ton of stuff to get to on the program. And of course, the Major League Baseball season is often referred to as a marathon. It's not a sprint, 162 games, it's 6 months, it's a freaking grind, and it's way too early in the season to say you are what your record says you are if you're a Major League Baseball team right now. This isn't football. You know, we're about 7% through the Major League Baseball season right now. But at the same point in time, even though you can't win a World Series right now, you can certainly freaking lose a World Series if you dig yourself such a deep hole that you can't get out of it. And the Toronto Blue Jays are starting to find themselves in this situation right now. 1-4, not a big deal. 1-5, all right, we'll turn it around. You know, you're 2-10 right now. You've got problems. You got the Boston Red Sox coming up next if you're the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, it's not rocket science when it comes to why the Blue Jays aren't winning baseball games right now. They're not hitting the baseball. You know, 12 games, the so-called potent Blue Jays offense has scored 4 runs or less 10 times. 10 freaking times out of 12 games. I mean, come on, man. The Blue Jays used to score 4 runs in a freaking inning. You know, now they can't score more than 4 runs in a game. They're averaging 2.8 runs a baseball game. 2.8. There's NHL teams that are averaging more goals in the playoffs per game than the Blue Jays are averaging runs. Now, you know, basically, now listen, you know, I'm not Bill James or anything like that, or Jonah Carey, but I'm smart enough to know 2.8 runs per game in the American League East. That's not going to win you like a first 5-inning bet, let alone a baseball bet. Now, if you bet on the Toronto Blue Jays, if you put $100 on every Blue Jays game this year, you're down $1,100 already. They're the biggest money burners in Major League Baseball, and things aren't getting any better right now. Aaron Sanchez got a freaking blister on his head. You know, blisters are a real problem. Sounds like a little thing, but it's a big problem for pitchers, and it seems to be a problem already this year with more than a couple of guys. I don't know. How do you avoid getting blisters? I don't know. You know, maybe you need to urinate on your hands like Moises Alou used to do. You know, toughen showing him up. So I don't know what the hell's going on with the blisters, but Sanchez, now Hap's going to be going on a DL. Donaldson is hurt right now. It's a domino effect, and it really just seems as if, though, this team is really cursed. It's not John Gibbons, the manager's fault that the team isn't hitting. And is it Shapiro's fault that the team isn't hitting? No, but it's Shapiro's fault that the Toronto Blue Jays didn't load up in the offseason like you have to in the American League East. Mark Shapiro, the general manager, president, whatever the hell he is, the Lord Savior of the Toronto Blue Jays, he had a lot of success with the Cleveland Indians. But you know what? We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. You know, this isn't the American League Central. You're not playing the Minnesota Twins, man. You know, you're not dealing with the Kansas City Royals, and the Royals are a good baseball team, but it's not a budget-heavy division like the American League East is. And the fact of the matter is, the Toronto Blue Jay organization is the richest in all of sport. They have more money. The conglomerate that owns the Blue Jays has more money than, like, basically 12 teams freaking put together, all right? The Toronto Blue Jays could have afforded to keep Edwin Encarnacion, and I don't care if he's struggling in Cleveland or not. The Toronto Blue Jays can afford to add superstar pitchers in the offseason. But, you know, the bottom line is they don't really have any interest in winning, because if they did, they wouldn't have hired Mark Shapiro. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. I am Gabriel Morency. We got a great show for you. Dave Malinsky, he writes a daily column over pregame.com. He's going to join us. Chris Meany, Fantasy Sports Network's very own, will join me in studio. We'll continue the Morency mock draft. We're having a great time breaking this stuff down. And I try not to. I'm taking it seriously, actually, all right? Like, I take everything I do seriously. So I'm thinking, like, I'm sitting there. It's like 3 in the morning every night. And I'm like, what will the Tennessee Titans do? And I tell myself, all right, Morency, don't drive yourself crazy. You know, they're taking John Ross. Just fill it in. And you know how many times during my mock draft I've written down the pick, written down all these notes? Last night I scratched the Washington Redskins pick 3 times. I was like, nah, I don't know. No. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. But hey, we're throwing darts right now. We're getting into the 20s into the mock draft. But I understand the Westgate in Vegas released the NFL draft props yesterday. Haven't had an opportunity to look at them yet. We look forward to that. The offshore books will start posting that soon. Let's bring in a professor right now. Dave Malinsky, straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. How you doing, Dave?
You know, Gabe, unfortunately, because it was tax day for me yesterday, I haven't had a chance to get the Westgate props yet either. But it's fascinating when you're booking something for the first time, because it means, one is you got to guess what does the audience actually want to bet on. But here's the thing the books always have in every sport out there. They have not only their power ratings of the teams, but they know the public perception. They know whether the public likes the Cowboys or the Raiders. They don't have a clue on any of that about the draft. There's no public betting paper trail. That makes this a fascinating process.
I'm hearing some places they're going to have like $500 limits on these bets.
That seems about right. You want to lower your liability. Also, of course, there are some bets here, much like we joke about Academy Awards and other things. There may be bets on the board that somebody somewhere already has an answer to. So for now, it looks like all bets will be capped the day before the draft begins. So on draft day itself, There may, I believe, nothing live. So they've got to work around that a little bit, but there is a chance that somebody can know something. That's why they have to cap it at a nickel.
Yeah, and even at a nickel, hey, you go for a walk on Fremont Street, you can get a couple of dimes in. You know what I mean? Like, if you, you know, spend the afternoon hitting up every book, it'll be interesting to see. Because like you said, yeah, there's no angle. It's almost like modern warfare, Dave. It's all cyber right now. The field's been equalized. So, you know, like when you attack this draft. We'll hit that next week as the draft is around the corner. So NBA postseason continues. Cavs beat the Pacers. Pacers get the backdoor cover. Game goes over the number again. And I've liked the over in both these games in that series. Meanwhile, Memphis and San Antonio, dear God, if you think like C-SPAN is boring, try watching this series. It's freaking awful, Dave. Terrible, terrible.
Let's give the Grizzlies credit for at least in the second half reaching back and trying to make a run. But, boy, there's just so many questions about David Fizdale's rotation. And I tell you what really has to be disconcerting at this point. I mean, they move Vince Carter into the starting lineup. Vince Carter can pretty much do one thing. He can score. Be a good explosive bench scorer maybe to have out there. Take a look at Vince Carter's minutes from Monday night. And now this is somebody playing the number three, the small forward position. He's out there for 33-17 a court time, two-thirds of the game. No rebounds, no assists, no steals, no block shots. How can you have a guy on the court that long that does nothing but zeros in those categories?
Absolutely insane. You're better. And I thought it was insane that he played 28 minutes actually in game one, and then they up it to 33. So let's talk about the Bucks and the Raptors tonight, Dave. You and I both were very high on the Raptors coming into the playoffs. Their body language was terrible, and I guess it's not a surprise. The Raptors always lose game one of playoff series, and have only won one in their franchise history. They're 1-11 in game ones. In the first round, they've never won a game one before. Last year, they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. They lost game one of every series that they played in. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised. And there was a pattern last year, Dave, of which, you know, DeRozan and Lowry would struggle in a playoff game and it's dropped 28-30 in the next one. Then it's struggle in the following game and drop 28-30 again. DeRozan has fought his way through that. He's an automatic 28 on a nightly basis. Even if he's off his game, he's going to give you 28-30 points right now. Kyle Lowry was brutal. 0-for-6 from 3. Absolutely terrible from the field as a whole. The body language was bad. What do you expect from the Raptors tonight?
Yeah, I mean, mentally, they will play better. And DeRozan will get his. The problem for Lowry isn't just mental. It's also physical now. Milwaukee's a very long team around their perimeter. And, you know, Malcolm Brogdon had a great rookie season that almost no one appreciated. Because, you know, Gabe, we rant all the time about in the one-and-done era, all these kids play 1 year of college basketball, go to the NBA, they don't know how to play defense. Malcolm Brogdon had 4 years under Tony Bennett at Virginia. That is as well prepared coming into the league to play defense as literally a player could ever, ever be.
Dave, he understands defense as a rookie better than 90% of the players in the NBA do.
Yeah, now Brogdon's 5 inches taller than Lowry, which means, one, Lowry has to beat a bigger guy. Well, guess what happens if he does beat him? He runs into a lot of length. Snell, Antetokounmpo, Middleton. This is a long team. It's not easy to deal with on the perimeter. So Lowry's going to play harder tonight. That doesn't mean he's going to play better, though. This is a tough matchup for him.
It is a tough matchup for him. He needs the three ball to fall, Dave, to loosen things up. He was 0-for-6 from the field, and it was one of those deals where mentally he seemed to be caught in between. There was never any conviction with anything that he did. When he took it to the rack, he was sort of unsure. And, you know, he had open looks. He would hesitate, and then he'd throw a brick. He just wasn't in a rhythm at all. But I do believe that he bounces back tonight, Dave. And I think the intensity factor will be there for the Raptors tonight. But with that being stated, I'm not in a hurry to lay 7.5 points.
No, I mean, I can see the Raptors getting the win. If they bring the right focus, they're going to win the boards in this series. And if they can get their defense set, they can stop the Bucks. Now, the problem in the second half on Saturday, the Bucks got a lot of fast break points.
Yeah.
They got down before the defense was set. If Toronto just hits the boards and gets set on defense, the Raptors win the game.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Monroe killed them on the boards. JV Valanciunas is a nice offensive player, but he gets exposed in the playoffs with his defensive weakness. The point guard play was an issue, actually, even with Corey Joseph. You know, a lot of people were talking about getting the DeLon Wright kid in, Dave, from Utah, getting him some playing minutes. But I think the Raptors win tonight. But as we stated, not in a hurry to lay the 7.5. Dave, the total was $192. It's been bet up to 194.5 over the last couple hours.
if it goes much higher, I may have some under inclinations here, because I believe as long as it's a half-court game, neither team scores that easily. They're both built pretty well to defend each other. Milwaukee tried to push and got away with it. Toronto doesn't really push.
No.
You know, so I don't think the Raptors are going to try to beat the Milwaukee defense down the court. 195 is probably where I start to buy in.
I'm an over-better, generally, Dave, when it comes to the NBA, but I'm not biting. As far as the total here, I'll pass. And a similar situation with the Bulls and the Celtics here. The Bulls are a bipolar basketball team. But right now, they're on their medication, Dave, because they're on a freaking roll. They're dysfunctional. I don't know about their team chemistry. I think they might dislike their coach. Rondo is as up and down a personality as there is in the NBA, but everything's falling into place for them at the right time right now. You got Rondo, you got Dwayne Wade, two guys that are NBA champions that are playoff tested. You got Jimmy Butler that's as good as anybody when it comes to the star score power. I like the Bulls coming in here to upset the Celtics. I told people they're going to beat them plus 375 in a series price, and then obviously the Isaiah Thomas sister tragedy takes place. And really, I wonder how the Celtics overcome this right now. I mean, he's playing tonight and he's going to a funeral after the game, Dave. The media sort of paid attention to this on Sunday like it's a Disney movie, and then life's back to normal on Monday, Tuesday, etc. It's not. Like, he's still living with this. He's their best player, not to mention their rebounding situations, but tonight should be an easier spot for the rest of the guys, shouldn't it be, Dave?
A little easier, but you know what? I mean, we talk about Chicago's chemistry issues. It was a problem all season, except for now. When those veterans go to the shoot-around, when they sit amongst themselves in the locker room, you know what they're saying to each other. Hey, we're better than these guys.
Yeah.
We can win this. Personal egos all go out the door, because keep in mind, lurking in the back of the minds of all the Chicago players is they swept Cleveland this year. So not only do they believe they can beat Boston, they got to believe they can beat anybody in the Eastern Conference. So they will suck it up. But you talked about rebounding, and it's going to be so crucial here. Bulls number 4 in the NBA this year. The Celtics number 27. Bulls have out-rebounded them by 55 in their 5 head-to-head games this year. It's just hard not only to win when you're getting beat on the boards, but you got Boston out there laying 7. You don't win by more than 7 very often if you can't at least break even on the boards.
Yeah, very similar to the Raptor game. And normally we talk about the zigzag theory. Teams, home favorites that don't win game one, specifically don't win outright in game one, bounce back. But I think they bounce back, but in a similar situation. This could be a close basketball game. I did take the over in game one. We got lucky, Dave. There were 60 points scored in the fourth quarter. What do you make of this one? I find it a little high. I'm kind of hesitant to bet the total here.
Yeah, you did get a little bit of inflation off of that late ending. I think an over player probably lost their value edge at about 204. I'm seeing 206, 206 and a half now. That gets a little tight.
We should note the Bulls are on a 7-2 against the spread run their last 9 road games. The Celtics just 1-7 against the spread their last 8 at home. Jazz and Clippers. Very interesting series here. Interesting dynamic. They both battled down the stretch for home court. They knew they were going to be playing each other. The Clippers end up getting home court. Rudy Gobert gets hurt, 17 seconds into the game or whatever it is? And then you think, all right, a big advantage Clippers here. But, we talk about a bipolar basketball team, and it's no secret. They're going to have to break this thing up with the Clip Show. But the Clippers are weird, Dave. They were smoking down the stretch. But to me, the Clippers can't win meaningful basketball games. And I don't dislike Blake Griffin, but I don't like Blake Griffin. Like, I don't like his jump shots. I don't like his game. And he doesn't fit with DeAndre Jordan. They lose this, they're breaking it up. What do you make of this right now, Dave? And I got to tell you, I was surprised to see the numbers up to 9 here. I like the Utah Jazz plus the points.
Yeah, the markets are reacting against Gobert far more than what happened on the court. And here's what was mystifying about Saturday for people who didn't stay up late and watch. For a big part of that game, Boris Diaw was playing center and Joe Johnson was playing power forward. Okay, those two guys are older than you. And Clippers couldn't exploit them inside. Blake Griffin was 7 for 18 on his two-point shots, and he had 6 turnovers.
Well, Dave, he always settles for that stupid, long, two-pointer. He takes these 22-foot two-point shots all the time. He's wide open at the top of the key, and instead of, the guy's massive, instead of just running to the rack and everyone will get out of the way and him dunking it, he takes a jump shot.
That's what we want to focus on early tonight. With a couple of days to put a game plan together, is everything for the Clippers at the basket? Because right now, Utah's just not geared to defend. They relied on Gobert for so much. Gobert, one of the best rim protectors in the sport. They don't have another one. They don't have fouls to give. They don't have size inside. But can the Clippers show that toughness? Now, the problem is DeAndre Jordan is not a go-to offensive player. You know, he'll score off of an alley-oop pass about half of all of his field goals. So you can't go to him down low. You have to go to Griffin. He's got to suck it up and be that guy tonight. He doesn't always do it.
Chris Paul played great, though, Dave. And Chris Paul's going to get criticism about the playoff failures. But Paul was great. And let's, you know, I don't want to overreact with the Clippers in the sense that the game was tied 90-90 and Joe Johnson turned back time. Like I said, he's listening to Cher before the game, Dave, because this guy's turned back time and, you know, he hits the game winner at the buzzer. So it is what it is. I wanted overtime because I was on the over. What do you make of the over this one at 197?
I think there's some potential here because one of the things that Utah did well is without Gobert, they're actually a better offensive team because they can spread the floor with a shooter at every position. So they've got a chance to cause trouble for the Clippers defense. I mean, essentially, DeAndre Jordan's one of the best defensive centers in the NBA. You negate him by going small because he's got nobody to guard. And at the other end, the Clippers have got to take it to the rack tonight. So I can see the over getting there in this one.
No, you know, you're right. If I'm Utah, I would push the pace on them because you don't want to play a half court. I know it's on the Utah's game, so to speak, but Quinn Snyder's a great coach. I was a big fan of his in college. He's doing a great job. All right, Dave, so we've got about 90 seconds here. Thunder and Rockets. Thunder got blown out in game one, and I want to get your take on the baseball board tonight. So quickly, Thunder, Rockets, as you expect, what is this, a five-game series, or the Thunder get back in it?
The Thunder have the pieces to get back in it, but can they make the pieces work? One of the things that is a real issue for Billy Donovan is Enes Kanter's a real effective offensive player in his rotation. He can't guard anybody in this matchup, and they pick and rolled Kanter to death whenever he was on the court. So now Donovan's got to make a decision about juggling his rotation up a little bit, and Russell Westbrook has to be under control in this particular series. That's hard for him because Houston can defend him with Patrick Beverley just about as well as anybody can. In fact, if you're going to list the three best defensive matchups for Westbrook in the NBA, Beverley absolutely one of the three.
Dave Malinsky with us. All right, quickly on the way out, Dave, Rockies and Dodgers. You know, big early series, mini two-game set. Rockies can sort of flex their muscles a little bit and send a warning to everyone. Yeah, we're in this for real. Dodgers have lost a couple in a row, and speaking of losing a couple in a row, the Blue Jays are terrible. I know they have Stroman on the hill, and there's a no-name rookie on the hill going here for the Sox tonight, but you can't lay 65 cents with the Dodgers or the Blue Jays right now.
No, in fact, I'm surprised that the phone's not clicking in for the Blue Jays asking you to come over and try out the DH.
I'm available.
They need some punch. The one thing you never would have seen 2 years ago is an opposing team bringing in a rookie left-hander to face Toronto. Well, that fear is gone now. No Encarnacion, no Donaldson. That fear is gone. Johnson can be serviceable for the Red Sox. He's a guy with decent stuff who's had a lot of different injuries through his minor league career. He's serviceable. At the price point, you got to put the Red Sox in the game.
Yeah, and as good as Marcus Stroman is, we just had the graphic up on the screen. He never gets any run support. No, the Jays don't have any run support. They're averaging 2.8 runs a game. They've scored 4 runs or less in 10 to 12 games. The Jays are just 3. 3-7 in Marcus Stroman's last 10 starts. Dave, you're the best. It's always a pleasure. Check out Dave's column over at pregame.com. And, oh, yeah, sorry, Dave, but you had a five-inning line bet, didn't you, going today?
Yeah, let's give the Arizona Diamondbacks, like, something that the fantasy people will certainly be alert to. Shelby Miller's velocity, way, way up off of last year. Time to buy in early with him.
All right, sounds good. We'll cash it. Dave, always a pleasure, man.
Thanks, guys.
There's Dave Malinsky with us. We take a quick break. We come back. We talk NFL football. Our mock draft continues. And you know what? We're going 16 through 20 here, but it's pretty sexy stuff. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does our National Football League mock draft. I'm fired up for the draft, man. I can't wait to bet on this. They released the props yesterday in Las Vegas. There'll be a trickle-down effect, copy and paste effect, so to speak, with the offshore books. So your book will have some NFL draft props. We've been breaking down the mock draft. We're into pick 16 through 20 here. We'll wrap up the mock draft this week, and then next week we'll start to focus in from a betting perspective and take some of our mock knowledge and try to make some money off of it, which leads us in to the 16th pick in the 2017 NFL draft. The Baltimore Ravens are on the clock and they select wide receiver Corey Davis, Western Michigan. Now, you guys know me. I've been, you know, nobody watches more Mac football than I do, and I've been watching Mac football for a long time. I'm old enough to remember when Antonio Brown was lighting it up for my Central Michigan Chippewas. And I'm also young enough to remember Corey Davis lighting it up with Western Michigan. If you pay attention to what I say, and I know very few of you actually do, and rightfully so, I can't call you out for that. But I've been telling you guys, I said this a long time ago before anyone even freaking heard of Corey Davis. He's Antonio Brown. You know, Kobe Bryant like patterned himself after Michael Jordan. You know, they talk the same, they walk the same. He sticks his tongue out, you know, the bald head, the shoes, everything about him is the same. This is very similar. Although Corey Davis is bigger than Antonio Brown is. Corey Davis is actually 6'3". He's actually a bigger dude. Bigger dude than I actually realized. So, you know, he's not physically Antonio Brown, but we're talking about a guy that played in the MAC, all right? Central Michigan and Western Michigan. We're talking about guys that the Michigan Wolverines and the Michigan State Spartans of the world didn't want. Guys with chips on their shoulder. Guys that have racked up huge freaking numbers. And it's funny because you can say to yourself, and even I've wondered, well, yeah, because you look at Corey Davis and he explodes off the line and nobody's jamming him because he's playing against crappy DBs that play for Akron and Kent State and stuff, the Buffalo Bulls, etc. It's not as if though the level of competition and he's playing very good defenders. But we can say the same thing about Antonio Brown, and Antonio Brown did pretty well in the National Football League as well. But let's look at Corey Davis. How did he do against upper-tier echelon opponents? Well, he did pretty good. He put up 154 yards against the Michigan State Spartans. How did he do in the Cotton Bowl against the Wisconsin Badgers? 6 catches, 73 yards, and a touchdown. Sounds like the type of numbers that he could put up in a National Football League. I think it's a perfect fit for the Baltimore Ravens, all right? Steve Smith is gone. I mean, the guy can't play forever. He played for 118 years in the National Football League. You know, Mike Wallace, you know, Wallace is, might catch a bomb every now and then, but he's not a legitimate NFL wide receiver on a, you know, he's a number four guy in reality. Number three, number four, you know, number three at best. Perriman is young and raw. Looks like he could be good. You know, to me, listen, you gave Joe Flacco all that money, man. You got to give him something to work with here. And Corey Davis is this guy that he can work with. 6'3", 210 pounder. I like Corey Davis a lot. It wouldn't shock me if the Eagles took him. But with that being stated, if McCaffrey goes before, you know, I got him going to the Eagles, etc. But if Corey Davis is there, I think the Baltimore Ravens are going to take him. NFL comparisons, well, Antonio Brown, as far as his mindset, it's his idol and stuff like that. But if you look at him, actually, physically, and you watch his game tape, he's a lot like Brandon Marshall is. New York Jet, now New York Giant Brandon Marshall. Corey Davis goes to the Baltimore Ravens, which leads us into the Washington Redskins. You know, the Redskins were tough, man, and I wavered as far as the Redskins are concerned. I want to go put my boy Jabril Peppers in here at some point, but I just don't think the Redskins are going to do this right now. You know, the Redskins lost Pierre Garçon to the 49ers. Deshaun Jackson's now in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Whatever, man. Deshaun Jackson was always hurt. You know, I'm not a big Deshaun guy. You know, Deshaun's good, but he's always hurt. You know what I mean? Every time he runs down the field, he pulls something. So I was thinking, you know, the Redskins are going to go wide receiver here. But let's not forget, man, they drafted John Doxson last year out of TCU. This kid is a baller. He was injured, but now they'll have an opportunity to step up and in. We know the Crowder can play. You got a good tight end. You signed Terrell Pryor. They don't need a wide receiver right now. Suddenly they don't need a wide receiver. You know what they need? They need help on the line. They need linebackers. All right, their defensive line and their linebacker play is just quite simply not good enough. Their depth is extremely thin, and you know, they have an opportunity to do something about it. So, you know, defensive lineman, linebacker, the best player on the board right now at this spot for what they need is Haason Reddick, linebacker out of Temple. Now, he's a little bit undersized by NFL standards, 237 pounder. He was actually a DB in high school, but you know who he reminds me of? Vic Beasley. Vic Beasley only weighs 245 pounds. Vic Beasley's taller. Vic Beasley's 6'3". Reddick's like 6'1". But Vic Beasley, we see, you know, outside speed linebacker, pass rushing, you know, specialist. But Reddick can play to run a little bit as well. He has great football instincts. He really understands the game. He's an explosive player off the ends. You know, they call him the best edge passer in the draft by far. I think he's a good fit, and he addresses some needs for the Washington Redskins. The Redskins were ranked 24th versus the run. They gave up 119 yards a game. They were 25th versus the pass. They gave up 258 yards a game. But you got Norman, you got Breland. To me, you get a linebacker and the young stud, sort of like a Khalil Mack type of player in a Haason Reddick. 6'1", 237. 4.5 speed, man, is freaking fast, actually, for a linebacker. So I think he's a nice playmaker. I think it's a good fit for the Washington Redskins. Let's get a little quicker here. Literally and figuratively, the Tennessee Titans are once again on the clock. We told you they're going to take Marshawn Lattimore, DB, with the fifth overall pick in the draft, but they have the 18th pick as well. You know, the Titans are a nice young team, but what are they missing? Well, you know, what are they legitimately missing? All right, they're stacked at the running back position. They got Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray. They got a good offensive line. They got a Pro Bowl tight end in Delanie Walker. They got a stud quarterback in Marcus Mariota. But, you know, Rishard Matthews and Tajae Sharpe, that's not good enough. You know, you need to do a little bit better. And let's give Marcus Mariota, a former Pac-12 colleague, and John Ross, the speedster out of Washington. Now, listen, I'm not in love with John Ross personally. You know, to me, you know who John Ross is? He's Deshaun Jackson. He's the new Deshaun Jackson. I'm telling you, that's who he is. And you know what else he reminds me of, actually? But I don't think he's as good, but I think they're going to have similar situations in career. Sammy Watkins. All right? Sammy Watkins isn't a deep down the field threat. He's just been turned into one because coordinators don't know how to use him in the NFL. John Ross is just going to be a run down the field type of guy because he's got 4.22 speed. But, you know, when he's set that record at the combine, he couldn't continue after he ran a 40 because he tweaked something. You know, so, you know, he's one of these deals. He gets mad when he doesn't get the ball. He's a typical pouty prima donna wide receiver, but he's fast as freaking hell. The Redskins like to throw the deep ball, and you're going to be able to throw the deep ball with this guy. I got John Ross going to the Washington, to the Tennessee Titans. I liked John Ross to the Redskins. So I'm saying to the Redskins. I had John Ross going to the Redskins because of the deep ball aspect, but and the comparison to Deshaun Jackson, but they got the wide receivers. They don't need them right now. It's a nice fit for the Tennessee Titans. They got a million draft picks. They can afford to take a gamble here. And you know what? He's not just the speedster, though. He had 81 catches for 17 touchdowns, all right? So it's not just, oh, he's just really fast. He can catch a football as well. You know, he's, you know, I don't know. Maybe is he Randy Moss? Probably not, but he's freaking fast. All right, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, O.J. Jay Howard. How do you not do this? You know, this guy's a freak of nature, this guy. How do you not do this? 6'5", 251 pounder, 4'5", speed. You know, he's got the fastest time for somebody that's over 6'5" and 250 pounds since Jimmy Graham, actually. You know, Alabama didn't use him properly. Alabama's not a pass-happy offense. This guy's a monster, man. I mean, is he Antonio Gates, Julio Thomas, Gronkowski? Take your pick. I think he's gonna be much more offensive-minded now in the NFL. They're going to use him much more, but he can block. You look at Tampa and their wide receiver situation. You got Evans. You bring in DeSean Jackson, but DeSean Jackson is going to get hurt a lot. Cameron Brate was nice, cheap DraftKings fantasy player, but he's not a legitimate number one guy. And the fact is, the NFL is a too tight end reality nowadays. O.J. Howard is too good to pass up if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to give him that big outlet and that big weapon for Jameis Winston, man. You have Jackson, you have Evans, you have Winston, and you throw in O.J. Howard here. That's a legitimate, powerful, scary combination for defensive coordinators to deal with. So I got O.J. Howard going to the Bucs. And finally, in closing, we'll be quick here on the way out because, whatever, it's an offensive tackle. The Broncos, Garrett Bowles, Utah, offensive tackle. Broncos don't have a ton of needs, but the O-line is one of them. No matter who the quarterback is, they got to do a better job of protecting him. Bronco quarterbacks were sacked 40 times last year, 24th in the NFL. It's not a sexy pick, but you don't win Super Bowls at the strip club, all right? You get it done at the warehouse, so to speak. Bowles and Ramczyk, Robinson, all the highest rated tackles. I like the Utah Ute connection here. I know that the Broncos are actually meeting with this kid too. The Broncos are going with alignment, so it's either going to be the Robinson, Ramczyk, or Bowles, but I think Bowles will end up being the guy. 6'5", 297 pounder. He's almost built like a basketball player. He's not massive. He's kind of, he's a tall dude. Very, very athletic, though. He can run down the field. He can run block. He can pass block. People like him a lot, man. Scouts are comparing this guy to Joe Thomas, all right? Like, they like him that much. And you look at the AFC West, you got to deal with Joey Bosa. You got to deal with Khalil Mack. You got to deal with Justin Houston. That's a lot of pass rushers, man, and a lot of speed in the AFC West. You need a nice, quick offensive lineman. Garrett Bowles is your guy for the Denver Broncos. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does our NFL mock draft. I know Chris Meaney is enjoying the draft. Chris, if I had one do-over, I wouldn't have Dalvin Cook going eighth overall to Carolina. But I stressed when I made the pick.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I said, this is what I would do.
Yeah,
if I was Carolina, but I almost want to reverse it here, Chris, with McCaffrey going to Carolina eighth, and then Dalvin Cook to Philadelphia.
To the Eagles. And the Eagles, the running back is
definitely. Wouldn't it be nice for Dalvin Cook coming out of the backfield catching passes?
Sure. I mean, any of these running backs would be really good for Philadelphia, better than what they have. I mean, putting your mock into the Fantasy Sports Network ticker, but putting a couple other mocks in there as well, Walter Football, a couple other ones. And lately what I saw was Cook to the Bucks, and I don't think he's going to last that long. But interesting, their situation with running backs, too. You got the suspended Doug Martin. I know he showed up at camp, but it looks like potentially he's going to get cut.
Dalvin Cook and James Rodgers. Winston, former teammates.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's all seems like a recipe for disaster. Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be available that late.
Let's not reunite too many. Like, you guys are all right with Florida, but it's almost like prisoners. Like when you're released, you guys aren't allowed to speak to each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to put you in the same state, let alone on the same team. All right.
Yeah.
We're going to split you guys up, but nevertheless, NFL draft next week. NHL playoffs continue. I think it's fitting they should play. Taking care of business, working overtime.
Yeah.
11 of the 24 games have gone to overtime so far in the National Hockey League playoffs. I talked about it off the top of the program. Chris, if you bet $100 on every tie, so regulation tie, in every game this year in the playoffs, 11 overtimes, you'd be up $1,300, give or take.
And I know you like your pro lines, because out here, if you pick a tie,
I haven't been doing
it.
I haven't been doing it.
Camera 2 talked about picking all four yesterday as ties. He didn't do it, and all four of them end up being ties. What I've been doing is
Camera 2, listen, will you take advice from this guy? Hey, guys, I suggest you take all four ties in the NHL tonight. Look on camera two, Drew.
Look at that flow. You got the Clemson shirt on there in the back. Oh, there you go. Giddy up. Yeah, all four ties hit yesterday. Woo. What I've been doing is taking the plus 1.5.
And I think Cam lost every game in overtime.
You lose the odds by taking the plus 1.5, the puck line. But I've been doing it because all these games have been tight, and they have been. So I did it the other day with using basketball. It was an 8-game parlay. I had to hedge at the very end with the Thunder. The Thunder was the only basketball team, I believe, in game ones that didn't cover that spread. So, I mean, I've been heavy on the Bulls. I like them again. So I've been taking those pluses on that side of it. These hockey games have been tight. I mean, it's
even
been
the
tight
underdogs,
checking.
Yeah, we got ties.
All the road teams are
road teams,
too.
Underdogs. So leads us into tonight. Now, I am wearing a Montreal Canadiens
jersey. An Alexander Parajogin jersey, too.
Yeah, that's right. That's Radulov.
Yeah.
You know what? I got this Parajogin jersey. I used to get free gear. I had a sponsorship with a sports store.
Yeah. He was a big prospect.
It was like the official place. Like, they did the Habs jerseys for real. So it's like, we'll put the numbers on and everything for real for you. They're like, who do you want? Jose Theodore, Koivu? I'm like, nah. I'm like, give me that Russian kid that hit someone over the head with his stick. Hey, remember in Hamilton, he like cracked.
Oh, yeah.
But Parajogin could have been good. He had a ton of talent, this kid. But he was a psychopath.
Yeah.
And now I think he's a spy or something like that for Donald Trump.
He's in the KHL. Not playing hockey anymore. That's for sure.
Okay, anyways.
Yeah.
Canadians and Rangers. I'm wearing a Habs jersey, but I think the Rangers are the play tonight because they're the desperate team tonight. Chris, in my opinion, the Rangers were the better team in the first two games. The Habs played a perfect. They were awesome, though, in game three.
They were the better team up until the halfway point of game two, and it's amazing where the Rangers were. They were 17 seconds away from dominating this series, going back home, and really just having Montreal on the brink of elimination, basically. But you know what? That series changed halfway through. You know, the game-tying goal late, the overtime, the momentum has switched. I mean, game three's numbers are off the charts here for Montreal. Since the start of the second period in game two, they've outshot them 78-51. They've outchanced them scoring chances 27-13, high danger scoring chances 12-3, and chances on net 18-4. This is a must. On the flip
and
side,
the Rangers are, you know what's crazy? The Rangers are a better road team than our home team.
And these two teams,
they didn't win at home. They won 27 on the road. They've only won 21 at home. And in fact, Chris, they've been outscored 21-4 in their last six home playoff games.
Yeah, it dates back to last season. Yeah, these two teams are very, very similar, Gabe. They play the same way. They both, you know, generate from the back end. They get in
on
the forecheck.
They're the same, but it seems like the Canadians are just a little better.
Right now, just a little better. Just more. What I've seen from them is more energy, more scoring chances. I mean, Alan Vigneault has called out everybody today, saying that the best player has been Glass. The best line has been the fourth line. They need everyone to show up besides
Lundqvist. But you know what you're saying in New York, and it's interesting, actually, is that they're playing two playoff style. There's too much dump and chase, too much fundamentals, and even Vigneault admitted, he said, no, open it up, guys. Like, do what you got to do. Because they're doing everything right, but they're losing still.
So
you know what I mean?
So I expect a very different Rangers team because of that. What I've noticed from them in so far in this series is that they're content to get to the red line and dump it in. It was a lot of getting away from Carey Price. And in the first game, it was Carey Price touched the puck too much. They dump it in and they don't get it. So I expect a different Rangers team tonight, trying to open things up, get creative, get offensive. Because Zuccarello has been invisible. Kreider has been invisible. Nash, in my opinion,
we got to get to the other game. So who do you like tonight?
I still like the Canadians. I think they're better. The special teams has been the difference.
Penguins and Jackets. Minus 120. Jackets are just on the wrong side of this thing. And it's too bad for them because they had a great year, which will totally be erased. Like, forget about their big win streak and stuff. They're about to get swept. And no one will, you know, they're just going to say, well, we got to break this team up. We can't win with these guys. You know, they're just a day late, a dollar short, but they blew a 3-0 lead the other day. We'll only got 1 minute.
I like the Jackets to get the win tonight. Desperate team at home. Give me the Jackets, but it's so tough to go against them.
All right. I'll tell you right now, I don't know what it is. This is why I like the Sharks. I sympathize with the Sharks. The hockey gods don't like them. Like, they're cursed.
I feel like with the Flames.
Yeah, the Flames, that's another
controversial
story.
Every night there's a controversial call with them going the wrong way.
Yeah, Flames. I knew that last night, too. I swear, when it was, I heard him say, you know, 10 of the last 10 overtime games, and then boom, they make it 4-3. And as they made it 4-3, I heard David Amber say, that's 10, you know, with the Hawks game.
Yeah.
10 of the 23 had gone to overtime. And I said, 4-3. I said, oh, the Flames are going to go to overtime. I didn't bet it, and of course they did. They did. So anyways, tonight we got the Oilers and Sharks. Talbot's got two straight shutouts right now. The Sharks are in trouble, but they're a desperate team. I like the Sharks in the under tonight.
Yeah, it's I like that narrative of going with the desperate team, because if you go down, it's like the Rangers. You go down 3-1 going to Montreal, going down 3-1 San Jose, going to Edmonton, you feel like
you're in a tough spot,
Chris?
The desperate team scores first and then chokes.
And then they score first, they come out strong. And then they feel like they need to change their game a little bit. That's what the Rangers, that's what happened to them in game two. They sat back and it got caught up to them. But for the Sharks, I mean, 8 goals combined here, 16 shots in game two, 23 in game three, a boatload of power plays in the last two games, not getting anything done. The thing is Burns seems hurt, and it's definite that Thornton and Couture is hurt.
That's the thing. The Sharks are not at 100%.
They're not the same team.
I think they can dig down. If the Oilers win tonight, then they're a dangerous team going forward, because it shows they have mental fortitude not to take the pedal off the metal. If they sense blood in the water around the Sharks.
0 points and McDavid only 2.
Half the goals in this series have been on the power play, actually. All right, our NBA lineup absolutely crushed it last night. Let's try to keep it rolling this evening. Let's start off with Chris Paul. I was thinking about going with the Greek Freak in this spot, but Paul is more than $1,000 cheaper, and he actually put up more DraftKings points than the Greek Freak did, despite the Greek Freak's major outburst. Paul is involved in everything that the Clippers do. The Clippers are going to be a desperate basketball team this evening, literally and figuratively. Like, these guys are on the brink, man. They're going to bust this stuff up soon. He's the heart and soul of the team. He had 25 points, 11 assists, 7 boards, 57 DraftKings points. No reason not to like him here. I think the Clippers play better offensively tonight. I think Paul goes off, probably puts up 60, 65 DraftKings points. Speaking of going off, DeMar DeRozan, very, very consistent. The Raptors were putrid, freaking terrible. I was embarrassed to be a Raptor fan. You guys made me sick. But DeRozan was himself, all right? The guy's going to put up points. Put up 28 points, 8 rebounds, 38 DK points. He's going to have an even better game tonight. Expect 45 DK points from DeMar DeRozan tonight. Joe Johnson, this guy must be listening to Cher. If I could turn back time, I'd hit buzzers and winning shots against the Clippers. Joe Johnson gets it done at the buzzer. This guy was unbelievable, man. 9 of 14 from the field, 3 of 4 from three-point land. Hit the game winner at the buzzer. Put up 38 DraftKings points for $5,100. Sign me up. Derek Favors. Derek Favors getting a lot of opportunities right now because Rudy Gobert is out. Favors is in. He put up 26 DK points in 32 minutes for $5,300. We'll take it. Boris Diaw, only $3,000, man. Fair price for the veteran. He played 23 minutes in game one, especially with Gobert out right now. They're going small, so expect to see Diaw get the same amount of playing time. He put up 21 DK points. Hey, for $3,000, that's 7 times the value. Kyle Lowry. No one's going to want to touch Kyle Lowry tonight. I will. This is what Kyle Lowry does. He's terrible one game. He bounces back in the next game. He was 0 for 6 from 3. He was 2-11 from the field. Book it. He's going to have a bigger game tonight. No one's going to own him, and he's going to play up to his value. Bobby Portis, the Hog, has been smoking 8-10 for the field. Give me Bobby Portis and Rajon Rondo. Speaking about turning back the clock, but Rondo puts up nice fantasy numbers because he rebounds. All right, so let's get to our plays of the day. Raptors and Celtics. I think they're both going to win, but I don't want to lay the points here, and I don't want to play it on the money line because it's too big. Let's 5-point tease it. The teaser won last night. Give it to Utah Jazz. Plus 9 against the Clippers. Clippers probably win, but 9 points, a lot of points. Give me the over, 198.5. Montreal Canadiens, I think the Rangers get it done this evening. They're desperate. I think it's a low-scoring game. It goes under. Dun, 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 dun. Sharks, speaking of desperation, Sharks get it done tonight. Game goes under the number. And how do I not take the Boston Red Sox? You can't lay 65 cents with the Jays. May the winners be yours.